Welcome in to the Rockies Insider. I am your Rockies Insider, Patrick Lyons, breaking down the wild card round. Clay Snowden of Just Baseball. Let's talk about the series that have wrapped up, and we'll look a little bit ahead to Saturday's game. But the sweeps from San Diego, who I thought this was the one series where the teams were too kind of the closest match, because you know Atlanta has the postseason pedigree, so it wouldn't have surprised you if they came into San Diego and knocked out the Padres in some shape or form. But they aren't able to get it done. Padres win game one 4-0. They on that first night on Tuesday, it was very low scoring games. We didn't get a homer until Tatis as the second batter. Michael King looked outstanding, 7 innings pitch, 12 strikeouts. Atlanta outhit San Diego 7-5, but was 0-5 with runners in scoring position, and they weren't able to get it done. And that story trickled into game two, where the Padres were able to close it out 5-4. And San Diego is again another one of those teams, I think, that has a lot of momentum right now going into the next round.
Yeah, it was just a down year for the Braves with injuries. And when you're picking up Gio Urshela to play third base, and it's at some point I looked at that roster a few weeks ago and just said, like, I don't even like fault them for not, if they don't, you know, advance. Like, I'm not, it's not something where, oh my gosh, like what you may think with the Astros, like, how did they not do that? Like, with the Braves, it was kind of like, yeah, I get it. Like, you get the pass for this year. And, you know, it for the Padres, it's, they kind of are at a point where they need this. Like, they need to start advancing in the playoffs. They need to show something out of all the buzz and hype and money spent over the past few years has amounted to not much at all, if anything, right? So to me, it was kind of a Padres have been hot, have been clicking, or pretty healthy compared to the Braves that, you know, it's just a down year for them and tons of injury issues. And so to me, it was kind of a, okay, like, that's good. I don't really see it as some like awesome momentum grab or anything like that. But that Padres team is legit, and they're a lot of fun to watch too.
Max Fried versus Joe Musgrove in the second game. Musgrove going out with that injury doesn't look good. I don't know if he's going to be out for the postseason entirely, but it just didn't look good. Max Fried in what will most likely be his final start with LA before going into free agency. Interesting that he pitches in San Diego, the team that originally drafted him, for those that recall, and went over to Atlanta in the Justin Upton deal. But this game, as soon as it ended, Padres fans at Petco Park packed out, which can be this amazing environment. I don't know why. I don't think of San Diego as being this great sports city, because it's a place you go to hang out and lounge, and it's beautiful and just you love life. But Padres fans are wild. And I've been in that building when it's been sold out, and it can get loud, and it can make a regular season game feel like a postseason game. But as soon as that final out came, you started hearing the chants, beat LA. Beat LA. And it might sound crazy, but I'm going to pick SD to beat LAD. I think the Padres will keep this momentum going forward, and I think they're going to take down the Dodgers in the division series.
So do I. And those matchups for the better part of what now? 2-3 years, those LA Padres matchups have been so good.
Three of the last 5 years, they're meeting in the division series, yeah.
And well, even in the regular season, it's like a Tuesday night at 10 p.m. on the East Coast where I am, and I'm staying up. I'm like into it, man. I don't even care who's pitching. I'm like into those matchups. It's been a good rivalry, and I just think it's the Padres' turn. And I know that sounds stupid because you don't do that in sports, but just the way things are going, and it's maybe based a lot off of vibes, which in the playoffs, like, I think vibes have some, you know, if there's a pie, I'm giving vibes 10%. Regular season, I may give it 3% in a game, but playoffs are a different thing, man. And the Padres are clicking, and I like them over the Dodgers as well, which would also just put for some great offseason content, like the Dodgers following and, you know, Dodger fans freaking out and asking for Dave Roberts' head and whatnot. Just typical Dodger stuff.
Yeah, they're gonna have to go out and sign Max Fried, who's from the LA area. They're gonna have to bring Roki Sasaki over from Japan. Yeah. And that's just the start. They're like, no, we're about 25 into our postseason, 25%. Yeah. So yeah, that would be crazy. And you're right, it's Vibetober, man. Like that, this is the time of the year where those kind of things are the bigger momentum shifter. You saw Tom DeLonge from Blink 182 throwing out the first pitch and giving a guitar to Kyle Higashioka. So it's like people are coming out, and I think Southern California, south of LA, they are feeling those vibes right now that the Padres right now, this team, finally Mike Schilt has figured out whatever the combination is to get it done. And Matt Cotraro, talking about another AL Central manager, he has figured out a lot of things as the Royals with their little dust up of the Baltimore Orioles, Kansas City one. Yeah. Game one, 1-0 on an RBI single from Bobby Witt Jr. At 24 years old, Witt becomes the youngest Royal to record a postseason RBI since Rocky's beloved Clint Hurdle back in 1978. Clint Hurdle, still the youngest player in Royals history to record an RBI in the postseason. So congratulations to Clint. Corbin Burnes was outstanding. 8 innings pitched, only gave up 1 run as he goes into free agency. Okay, that'll be another guy you could put on the Dodgers staff for next year, right? If the Padres go on and take down the Dodgers. And then Kansas City ends up winning game two, Seth Lugo taking down Zach Eflin. And the Baltimore Orioles, I think, are in disarray. They might not behave like it, but a little bit right now, they're a little bit in disarray.
I did not watch any of the series, but there's still takeaways that I have. One being, isn't it funny? 2 months ago, there was all this buzz about the Tigers trading Tarek Skubal and Baltimore will be and blah, blah, blah. And here comes, and at that time, the Tigers didn't have a bunch of young players. They had some, but trade deadline hits, they bring up their young players. Now, here's the young team in Detroit advancing, and the praised young team of Baltimore is going home. It's just a funny kind of way that this sport can turn around so fast. And with Baltimore, there's going to be some type of a change, I imagine. I don't know if it's manager. Like, I don't know where that situation is or if there's a trade or something. But it's rough to go and not score, you know, hardly any runs against the Royals. Who, it's not like the Royals came in on this absolute heater. They had lost a lot before getting into the playoffs. I just don't know what direction the Orioles go. I'm not saying they're going to trade everyone, reshape or anything, but like they need to shift some pieces around. And like Santander is a free agent. And like, what do you do with some of these guys who are now in ARB or reaching ARB? And do you extend them, try to figure out some money there or whatnot? But there's going to be something with that team. Now, the Royals, like I was saying, they weren't playing great baseball. And I don't think that they have some awesome roster or anything. I think that they played really well. And I think that at the end of the day, though, it's are you intimidated by the Royals lineup? If you're a pitcher in the playoffs and you see their lineup, what scares you exactly about it other than Bobby Witt? And that's not to, you know, he's obviously incredible and he can win a game by himself. But if you can pitch around him, get him out, even if you give up the home run to him or whatever, like there's not a ton in that lineup that's truly intimidating to me.
That's true. I mean, Michael Massey and his family and Michael Garcia, you know, they're right now saying, all right, Clay Snowden, you're talking ill of our family here. Yeah. Yuki saying in the chat, welcome to our good buddy, Yuki Matsui, the Yuki Matsui of the San Diego Padres. No, it's not. Salvador Perez, you know, still there in that lineup. Right. Other than him, you know, and even still, Salvador Perez isn't the same Salvador Perez he's been in the past. He's still close to it. But it's, yeah, that lineup, right, isn't scary. But the bullpen, I think, is, you know, somewhat sneaky good. The rotation is really where they're going to shine. And now you've got Bobby Witt Jr. versus Aaron Judge in the New York Yankees. So I like that matchup of number one versus number two in the AL MVP race. Going back on what you said about the Orioles, they are now 0-5 in the postseason with this group, whereas the Detroit Tigers are 2-0. So I think there's going to be some kind of shakeup. You know, on one hand, the roster is very talented because you got to do it in the regular season. On the other hand, you might need to make some changes. You already brought in a veteran guy like Corbin Burns who did his job in game one, but you might need to bring in more of those veteran presences with Santander and Burns both getting qualifying offers. If they don't come back, you can at least replenish the farm system a little bit, give yourself a couple more trade chips. Mike Elias did already say that Brandon Hyde's going to be back. I'm slightly surprised in that. Now, that's not a knock on Brandon Hyde, who's done a great job in the regular season the last 2 years and done a fine job, not a great, but a good job. He put those pieces out there to be successful, and they weren't in October. But a guy who was with this team for 3 100 loss seasons, it's pretty rare that a manager gets to be there for 3 100 loss seasons and is still around when you get back to relevancy. So, you know, you could change the manager out and everything could be exactly the same. That being said, we've seen that move happen a lot. Looks like it's not going to happen in Baltimore.
What if this is just the year of, not the year of the pitcher, we all know about that, but kind of the new age where the team that wins just has really good pitching and like you just kind of piece it together. Your seventh hitter who nobody really knows about is hitting, you know, getting a base knock and you win games 2-1. And I don't think that's impossible. I mean, offense was down across the league this year by a pretty decent amount. And if you shorten these games and get to your bullpen early and you have a really good bullpen, like it's not impossible. Like that's kind of what the Tigers do. That's kind of what the Royals do. It's possible that you could get by with, hey, we pitch really well and we string together two or three runs and that's all that we need to win.
Take your Tigers fandom cap off. It's pretty clear that there's a better chance, or it feels like it's more likely that the Tigers will take down the Guardians than the Royals will be able to beat the Yankees, right? Or maybe I'm missing something.
I think so. So there's a little I'm just going to say yes. And that comes down to being familiar with the Guardians and you know, maybe you don't pitch so and so in this situation because you did that three times previously and it didn't turn out a certain way throughout the regular season. I do think that the Guardians are a good team. I said since the beginning of the year, like, I thought that their record was better than their team, if that makes sense. I think that they kind of overperformed. And I think that the Yankees, with a guy like Judge, like, and, you know, Jose Ramirez is on the Guardians. So like, I put them both in this elite category. They can change the game at any moment. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that the Yankees handle the Royals. I think that the Royals just don't have enough. They have a lot of pieces I like. They don't have a ton of pieces that I think can win you a game. They're a win with instead of a win because of roster, if that makes sense. Like, you know, the Yankees can win because of Aaron Judge. They can win because of, you know, insert one, but Gerrit Cole or whatever. And I just don't see the Royals winning because of – I see them winning because of Bobby Witt, but that's it. Like, that's it. I really don't know. I mean, maybe I'm too harsh on their rotation and their bullpen that did perform all year, but in the back of my mind, I just think the sample size for multiple years is small.
It's perspective is so interesting, or context, because the Tigers are able to sneak in, and you think about them as maybe being only a little bit over 500 and 86 wins. All right, it's not a ton. But the Yankees only won 8 more games than the Tigers. So if you think about the best team in the American League as far as the postseason is concerned, and then the worst, it's not a big gap. So again, I think anything can happen. And the only way anything can happen for Kansas City, as you said, is if Bobby Witt Jr. is just able to carry them.
Yankees fans, and I don't remember if it was – I think it was this show I was saying it on, or Who's Better. Yeah, it was Who's Better maybe. There's never been more pressure, it feels like, on the Yankees in recent memory. Like, they came in, they started the season really well and then kind of leveled off, but now they're here. And in their mind, it's time to win a World Series. It's been a long time in Yankees terms since a World Series. They're relatively healthy, they have a good roster, and you already see the tweets this morning. This is the easiest path the Yankees have had. They have to win. They have to. There's no other. There's
don't pressure. Say that. Don't say that, people. I Why know. Would you say that?
I know, and I've seen it all over Twitter. They're putting pressure on themselves. This is just typical I almost said fanky. Yankee fandom. There we go. And right now, like, does the pressure on the Yankees mean something? Because I'm sitting here just thinking, like, how much pressure are on these other teams compared to the Yankees and on the AL side of things?
Yeah, no, nobody who's left right now, I think, is there that pressure. Even if Houston were still around, you know, there wouldn't be quite the same pressure because, again, Joe Espada has been there for a very long time, first-year manager, and he kind of gets that. Okay, there's pressure, but, like, my job's not on the line. Oh, if I lose this, I'm never going to have another gig in Major League Baseball again. It's just not the same. And so, yeah, there's definitely a lot of pressure on the Yankees. I think there's a lot on the Dodgers, but there's been a lot on the Dodgers for a long time, that to the point where it almost doesn't mean anything. It almost is noise. So I think Dave Roberts, you could say that, but he's the right guy to be there and in that spot and tell those guys that, like, you know, be patient and we'll get a ring. But, it will be interesting to see what happens here, in the next round. Saturday games get started back up again, and unfortunately not four games every single day like we've just gotten used to, but it'll still be really fun. Let's get into some other MLB news. In fact, let's get into the Rockies news, because there's some front offices that are shuffling around. They've made some moves already this week. Now's that time for it. Well, there'll be somewhat of an embargo on big baseball news on an individual team basis until the World Series is over. But some teams got some new leadership in their front offices. Rocky's not one of them. GM Bill Schmidt's going to be back again here for 2025. And though nothing has been announced for manager Bud Black, all signs are indicated that he will be back for 2025. You know, you could look and say, well, you know, it seems strange to reward a guy who, you know, took a team to back-to-back 100 loss seasons. And in fact, because the Marlins played somewhat well towards the final week of the season, Rockies finished with the worst record in the National League for the second consecutive year. They had never actually finished with the worst record in the National League before last year. Now they've done it in back-to-back years. And now you're bringing back Bud Black again. But for so many people that listen to the Rockies Insider and know this team well enough, you know, Rockies don't like to do things in an extreme fashion. And to get rid of Charlie Blackmon and your manager, Bud Black, in the same offseason seems like a major overhaul. It's just two people, but that's an overhaul for them. And so expect news of Bud Black coming back for 2025.
To me, when it comes to managers, like, they have and this is my opinion, the least impact of any head coach, I'm doing air quotes, in sports. And I do think that that does not mean they don't have an impact, but they're not calling plays. You know what I mean? It's a little different. I actually like the move. And you know, there'll be people that joke, like, Rockies are always just sticking to the same thing, status quo. They're not really doing any change-ups and whatnot. But let's just say they do bring in a new manager. How much better is this team expected to be next year? I don't think, like, drastically better. So now you're looking at 2 years down the road, if they're better. And at that time, like, you can still bring in a new manager then. Like, what you don't want to happen is you bring in a new manager and then you're stuck with that guy for multiple years. We just saw with the Reds, like, they brought in David Bell. You're not firing him. Usually, some extreme cases, you're not going to fire them for, you know, 4 years typically or whatnot. So let's just, like, they could bring back Black and just keep him until they feel like, all right, now this team's turning a corner and we need a new voice. Maybe that's the time to change managers or whatnot. But we'll see with the Rockies, man. It is I like the Rockies from, like, an outside perspective. I keep up with them. I was a huge Blackmon fan. Huge. Like, I remember wanting to, like, when I was younger and he was just getting started, I was like, that's the type of player I want to be like. And I don't know why. I just always liked him. And it's sad to see him retire. I mean, it's time, you know, it's it's getting there. And he's, what is he, 38, 37, something like that?
38, yeah. 14-year career. It was a great run. Got to retire number 19 eventually. Article coming out soon over on Just Baseball about that. But to your point, right, like it's, you think of players who sometimes they need to change the scenery. So yeah. they're around different voices. And the same is true for bringing in a new manager. You bring in a new voice who does things a little differently. And maybe that's what gets you a little bit more out of a roster like the Rockies have. And, you know, it seems out of the ordinary. It seems like more like the exception than it is something that you can, you know, truthfully, you know, latch onto as hope. But with the Royals going from 106 losses in 2023 to making the postseason this year, anything is now possible. I think baseball now is in a season or has a season where it's 3 months long, where it's April, May, and June, and then you just got to be fairly good for the first couple weeks in July, and then you can add at the trade deadline, and all the teams that subtracted the trade deadline kind of vanish in the rearview picture other than Detroit this year. And so you just have to be good for, you know, three and a half months, and now all of a sudden, okay, hey, the front office said that we're okay. They believe in us, so we're going to really continue to play this out rather than just run out the string of the final 2 months because, hey, we're already out of it. We're trading away pieces. There's almost no point. So let me start thinking about next year, or let me take a couple days off here and there. So it becomes this shortened season. This goal line is really short. And I think that because of that third wild card, I think that's going to allow more teams to kind of come out of the blue, similar to the Diamondbacks that we saw last year and the Rangers, who had only lost 100 games 2 years prior in 2021. So I think anything does become possible, you know, with that. And we've seen so many first-year managers make an impact on teams. So I understand the Rockies fans that are out there saying, hey, if we do get a new manager, I can see how a new voice and how a new way of going about business really helps change some of the clubhouse culture, which is good to begin with. But I can understand how that kind of logic can be applied. And you say, you know what, maybe the Rockies are able to have a different outcome with a different set of leadership. Instead, they're going to go the same route. Doesn't mean they can't get into the postseason and sneak in next year with somewhat of a turnaround and winning 83, 84 games. It could happen. But it feels maybe less likely so because you're running back the same squad, essentially, the same core. The core changes, but you're running back the same core for now the sixth or seventh straight year after losing six consecutive seasons, and yet you're bringing back the same core of people. That's what can be frustrating for some Rockies fans.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, just trying to be optimistic about it all, won't the Rockies, you know, Chris Bryant, I know you're sick of talking about him. I'm sure everyone's sick of hearing.
Who? Chris Bryant?
Who is that?
Yeah, keep talking. Let me go on Baseball Reference. Let me see if I can...
Leave him out of this next sentence. But shouldn't the Rockies be like significantly healthier, especially in their rotation, than they've been in the past couple of years heading into next year? Don't they have... I know Senzatella came back later in the year, right? And... Didn't they have one or two more starters that were out the past year or so that should be back?
Yeah, Herman Marquez, you know, he was able to make a start. We had to shut down, but he should be back next year. My tendency is to not really rely on him that much since it'll still kind of be his first year back from Tommy John. But yeah, you got Freeland, Gomber, Quantrill, Senzatella, and Ryan Feltner, who if you had a second half all-star team, right? If you played one, maybe that's something MLB should have, right? Before the playoffs start, all the best players from the teams that didn't make the postseason, second half all-star team, second half all-star game, play in Las Vegas. Ryan Feltner, you could argue he's the starting pitcher of the second half NL all-star team.
That would be fun. No, he's good. I've liked him. And I think that the Rockies, you know, there's always going to be the issue of, you know, pitchers and getting pitchers there and leaning into like, let's draft and trade for pitchers is the best route. It's just really difficult when like the majority of your assets that you're willing to either spend or trade have to funnel towards one aspect of a team. That's just a difficult way to build a roster, but that's kind of what they're going to have to do because there's not many pitchers lining up to pitch in Colorado. We know this. I know that's not breaking news, but you know, the issue I have for better or for worse, is that, like you said, the core has been the same. Like, they have some good players. And a lot of those guys have kind of either tapped out or have a limited ceiling. But that's the plan. Like, they're not making a bunch of big moves. They're not doing a bunch that – and again, this is an outsider perspective. You have a lot more information, so jump at me if I'm wrong on anything here. But just to me, it's like they have to have some shakeup. You have to trade somebody. I thought that they would trade Ryan McMahon this year. They didn't. I know that contract situation is kind of a, quote, long-term still, what, 3 or 4 years left or whatever it was. But I think it is time for some variation of a shakeup for the Rockies, because I want to see him be good, man. I do. That is one of my top five favorite ballparks I've been to. I love the Rockies fans, and I just like following the team for whatever reason. I'm ready to see them be a little bit better. And I know that they have a farm system that's on the way. And, you know, Drew Romo was, you know, up now, and Diaz is gone. And Michael Tolley had, like, the quietest power season of all time. Like, nobody knew about him. And he had, what, 25 home runs? If you asked just the common baseball fan, how many home runs did Michael Tolley have? They wouldn't even know who he is. And if they did, they'd say like 7, 8. I don't know.
Who's the only first baseman in MLB this year to hit 25 homers and steal 10 bases? Paul Goldschmidt? No, Michael Tolley, the only one. Wow. So you're right. The Rockies are everyone's – they are a non-threatening team to root for. They're like your girlfriend or fiance who has the best friend. You're like, oh, I don't have to worry about him. That's kind of the Rockies, and they need to change that attitude if they're going to step up and become him. Nathan, thanks for jumping into the stream there over on YouTube. A Twins fan, so let's behave here, Nathan, Clay. We're all friends.
Do we need to have
here.
A talk with Nathan?
We love baseball. We're all baseball fans here, so it's all good. Yeah, so some of the other front office changes, Farhan Zaidi out for the San Francisco Giants, and in Buster Posey, Gerald Dempsey Posey, the guy that helped get the extension for Matt Chapman. All of a sudden he's back. And now that short playing career, I'm up in the front office now, under 40 years old, running things. Great young baseball mind like him. That was a cool move to see Chaim Bloom in for the San Diego Cardinals. And then the Miami Marlins, the entire staff gone. That's it. Everyone's gone. So you kind of expected that Skip Schumacher, you know, had already said he wasn't coming back. We'll see if he ends up getting that job in Cincinnati. There's a lot of links with those two together. But the whole coaching staff, not even going to retain any of those coaches. So it's shakeup season for a lot of teams, and rightfully so. If you don't get the results, you know, you got to do something different.
Giants just went big fish hunting every offseason the past few years, and they didn't land really any of them.
No.
And then you got to pull back and say, whoa, 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 what's left? Where do we go from here? And we didn't get Correa. We didn't get Judge. We didn't get Ohtani, or name whoever it is. And then you end up with, you know, Michael Conforto is a good player. Mitch Haniger, you know, that offseason they got him. And they kind of end up with playing Bs or Cs, I think. And they've gotten a little bit too cute. Like, I think that they could build better teams or attract better players. And yeah, I like the Chapman signing, but they're a team that seems a little bit odd and caught in between. Them and the Cubs kind of remind me the same of, like, what exactly is your direction? You know, are you all going to do a rebuild thing? Or are you going to continue to sign these, like, solid vets and kind of hope for the best and have weird positions of players that, you know, people don't really expect much from to begin with? And I think both the I think the Giants in particular are just in a weird spot, and they kind of need a different direction. The Marlins, like, man, I don't know. Like, I just don't even know, Patrick, if I want to spend any time on the Marlins, to be honest with you. But the Cardinals, I mean, they're going in a different direction, and that's going to be interesting. You know what? Go ahead. Clip this, producer. We're going to do the clickbait of Arenado coming back to the Rockies, and it's going to get all the views. And
that is going to happen. I said it recently because, you know, Nolan Arenado was in Colorado for Charlie Blackman's press conference saying that he was retiring, snuck in the back in the corner. He was there with Daniel Descalso. And so just hearing him talk and, you know, the relationship between Arenado and the team is a lot different than the relationship between Troy Tulowitzki and the team. Whereas Tulo was told, you're not going to get traded. Don't worry about it. He was traded, and a lot of that blame was put on the general manager, but the owner needs to sign off on that, and he did. So Tulo, not really too happy with the Rockies. Whereas Arenado, it was a situation where he was feuding with the GM and vice versa, and they just couldn't get along, and Arenado wanted to be traded. So in a lot of ways, the Rockies did well. They did good by Arenado. Say, hey, thank you. We're kind of almost leaving now on good terms because you made right on this situation. And now with, like you said, you know, the Cardinals maybe looking to retool, do some things a little bit differently. You know, maybe Arenado ends up with the Rockies. I don't necessarily see that this season. I think Nolan still has another like bounce back year. He's not that old yet. Did take a major step back offensively this year. Defense was a little bit better than it was in 2023, but that's a long contract. And maybe by the end, you know, he does end up back in Colorado. And you know, is Ryan McMahon still on the roster? Is he playing second base? They'll figure those kind of things out. But I very much can see something like that happen. Last thing before we get out of here, Clay, the biggest news for me that I'm excited by, and it looks like the commissioner is finally listening to the fans and finally listening to the outrage over the uniforms. 2025, players for the All-Star game will be back wearing their uniform. Thank God. Thank you, Rob. Great job.
I love it. The fact that they ever went away from this in the beginning was 100% money driven. And now they've realized, and you know what's going to happen. It's so funny that they announce the Strauss or whatever the helmet sponsorship is for the playoffs. And people think that's stupid. For whatever reason, there's a lot of people in sports that are like super anti ads on jerseys or helmets or whatnot. And I kind of get that. I don't have a strong feeling against it. That comes out like the very next day after we see those, or maybe even the same day, they're, oh yeah, by the way, we're bringing this back, and every team gets to where everyone's excited. You know what's going to happen? You're going to show up, and that Rockies uniform is going to have some logo here and there, and the, you know, All-Star, then they're going to, it's still going to be money driven. They've just realized they can slap a logo of some company on there now, but I love it. I think that's how it should be. Really, you have a unique thing in baseball where other sports All-Star events are not like this.
No.
No one cares about the Pro Bowl in football.
No one.
Like, NBA is like, yeah, it used to be great. No one does the dunk contest or anymore. It's kind of gotten watered down over the years. Like, it's fine. And in hockey, I mean, yeah, like, the skills kind of, like, it's okay too. But, like, baseball is like, people look forward to the All-Star game. And you're doing right by doing just this. And, you know, it gives people some pride of, or team pride. And, you know, it's cool to see the, you know, X, Y, and Z out there in the Rockies jersey rocking the home team.
And the thing that I never really put together until right now, until talking with you, is this idea that, so you said the NBA. NBA is the perfect example for this because they have a skills competition, but not everybody participates in it. So the only time you see the All-Stars for the NBA All-Star game are on game day. And so the only time you have a chance to sell that merchandise is during the game. So you want that city-specific uniform on LeBron James. Great. That makes sense. But with the MLB All-Star game and the Home Run Derby, that's a workout day. So every player is wearing a uniform of some sort on Monday before the All-Star game on Tuesday. So you have players wearing two uniforms. They don't have to wear the city-specific and the new 2025 All-Star game jersey for the actual All-Star game. They can wear it the day before. And that's how it had always been, is the Home Run Derby jersey. And you have all the guys on the sideline there, and they're wearing that Home Run Derby jersey as well. So you can still call it the All-Star game jersey, but you just don't have to wear it in the game. So it still allows MLB to have their cake and eat it too, and not mess with the simplicity, you know, the simplicity and the beauty that is the All-Star game, and have fans go, hey, I do have a player that's represented in this game. I think the NFL, I don't know if the NFL has anything instituted. The Pro Bowl is so irrelevant.
But nobody cares.
But
it's flag actually, football, I think. Now.
Come to think of it, baseball is literally the only sport where there's someone represented from every team, because the Pro Bowl used to be the week before the Super Bowl, so you didn't even have the Super Bowl teams represented. So when you turn on and you tune into the MLB All-Star Game, you're like, hey, who's the guy from our city? For the last 3 years, you couldn't tell because they all look exactly the same. Their hats all look identical. The logos are different, but you can't tell those details. Whereas now you'll go back and say, all right, I'm looking for someone with Colorado across their chest, or I'm looking for a white jersey with purple pinstripes and a purple cap. Oh, now I recognize Hunter Goodman or Michael Tolia as my guy. You couldn't have done that the last 3 years. Now they've corrected that, and fans from all the different 27, 28 markets will be able to identify the team from their city.
Let's make this really simple. Really simple. You're at the ballpark 82 times a year at least, right? Around there. How many times have you seen someone wearing an All-Star jersey in the fans?
Ooh, not many.
Not many.
It always looks weird too. Because they use the colors from the city that they're playing in.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's
for
weird.
Multiple reasons. And this is my opinion, but I don't see it. I don't see people buying the apparel at all, like hardly at all. And most of it's because it's kind of a one-time wear thing, and there's no like pride. It's not like my team made the playoffs. I'm buying that, you know, AL Central playoff shirt. Like, that's cool because it's a pride thing. Like, oh, so-and-so made the All-Star game. Like, am I going to buy his All-Star jersey? Now, what I would buy is the team jersey with the All-Star patch. Yeah. I think that's cool. Like, I honestly think that they could sell more merchandise by doing this. I do not see people buying, promoting from pictures or when I'm at games either. I don't see someone walking around in an Aaron Judge freaking All-Star jersey. Like, I just don't see that.
Yeah, it's strange. There's, you know, and that's the other weird thing too is, like, Carlos Gonzalez had a couple all-star appearances, but a buddy of mine, shout out to Sunshine, he has a Carlos Gonzalez all-star jersey from, I think it was 2015, when the Padres hosted. So you're going to walk around with a yellow and brown jersey? Probably not a lot, right? Whereas if it was, you know, the Rockies jersey with a patch. So it's just a strange thing. But it is still a nice jersey on its own. You just might not identify it as a Rockies one. So if you're a hardcore fan, you buy that jersey, but when you watch the game, you'll be able to identify your player. So I think they got it right. I think what they did was like Coca-Cola in the 80s, where it's like, oh, it's the new Coca-Cola. And it's like, this is awful. Go back to what we originally had. And then it makes everyone happy. So maybe that was part of the plan all along, was let's make people pissed so we could give them back what they already had.
I think the way to do it is, if you did not want to do it, it's just make the All-Star uniform the same every single year and make it like a classic staple. You know how like people love buying like the Michael Jordan USA jersey, right? Like, it's a classic staple. Like, if you did the same thing instead of the city specific weird tons of gray and everything, like, just make a really classic, like almost like the Masters jacket. You know how it's like everyone thinks like elegance, excellence, like, make an All-Star jersey that is elegant and excellence and keep it the same each year. And it's almost like you're in the club now, which is funny because if you think of how many like one-time All-Stars that snuck in, like Dominic Brown or somebody who is in this elite club now, it is kind of funny to think about. But I think that would have been more successful than continually changing it and having some odd designs, and it just kind of burned out.
How about just – look, it's America. How about denim vests, and you get a new patch on the back like you're in a biker gang? And if you know, if you've been an All-Star 6 or 7 times, your back's going to be loaded up. You're going to look pretty badass. Clay, you are badass. Go ahead and plug away. Let folks know where they can find all your great content, Tigers, Reds, and just, you know, baseball stuff in general.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I have two different accounts. One's Reds-related, one's Tigers-related. I think the one that's listed there is the – Reds one, and I do not know my handle for the Tigers one, but you can find me by just typing my name in on there. And of course, justbaseball.com, where you'll find all of my written work as well.
At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB on all of the socials, at Rockies_insider as well. Make sure you're liking, subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast, as well as the YouTube channel. Clay, appreciate you sticking around. And everyone in the chat too. Love you guys for doing that. You've given me plenty of momentum. You've given me a little bit of the Tiger rub off, I feel like. But unfortunately, as we all know, even in the postseason, that momentum, it's only as good for me for my next show. So I'll talk to you then.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.